You are listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, and this is Book Lovers Cafe. Book Lovers Cafe is a program of reviews and interviews with a local perspective. I'm your host, Chris Wilson, and I am pleased to be here today talking to a visiting speaker, Danny Noonan, who is the project manager for the Hanford Program at Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. Danny contacted me at the library and has done a program called Atomic Footprints, the History and Art of the Hanford Nuclear Site. And I love that combination, history and art. So we'll be talking about that. Welcome, Danny. Thank you for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So you've spent the last 4 years working for this organization to raise awareness about the history and current threats of the Hanford nuclear site. For some of us here located on the Olympic Peninsula, we have lost a connection and current knowledge of what's happening at Hanford. I'm afraid some of us are woefully ignorant, concerned with our own issues here on the peninsula. So I'm so pleased that you're here to tell us a little bit about the current state and some of the history. Tell us about Hanford and what it is and what has happened there, why it exists, for one thing.
Yeah, I mean, you shouldn't be so down on yourself, because most people in Washington State, I fear, know very little about Hanford. And that is because, by design, it was a secret facility. It was built during World War II as part of the Manhattan Project. And there's about 50,000 people working there at the time, and about five knew what they were doing. The rest had no idea. Secrecy was paramount, and no one was allowed to talk about what they were working on. Most of the people who worked there found out from the newspaper the day that Truman told the world that we dropped two bombs on Japan and that Hanford was part of this program. The secrecy.
Let me stop you just for a second. So the 50,000 people that worked there during World War II did not know that they were developing an atomic bomb.
No.
Okay.
It's very, very. It was the Manhattan Project was a very secretive program. Truman himself, when he was vice president, didn't know about it, and it was only about 13 days into his presidency that they finally had a meeting with him and told them that they were developing a bomb and they were very close to having it finished. And I would have loved to have been in that meeting because. But then most people thought Hanford was going to shut down after the war, but then the Cold War started heating up. And not only did it continue, but it's expanded from 3 reactors to 9 reactors, the last of which Kennedy was there to cut the ribbon on. And it continued producing plutonium, which is the fuel for nuclear weapons, until the late 80s. And it produced about 60% of the plutonium for our nuclear arsenal.
Now, Hanford is in the Tri-Cities area.
Yes, it's in the Tri-Cities.
And right that's next, very close to the Columbia River.
It's right next to the Columbia River. And that's also by design, because they needed a fresh water source to power the reactors. They used the fresh water to cool down these rods. Both physically to cool them down and to let them decay a little bit. And so it's.
That doesn't sound good. Decay a little bit.
decay means that it becomes less radioactive.
Less hot.
Yes, less hot.
All right.
The area was picked for its isolation and for its access to fresh water.
But I do believe that there were some accidents and that involved the river. Is that correct?
So originally they didn't understand radioactivity as well as they do now, and they would take the water from the Columbia River, use it to cool down these rods, and then just put it back into the river without letting it sit for a long enough period. Especially towards the end of World War II, there was a very big fear that Japan would surrender before we had a chance to use these weapons. And a lot of the people in the Army would have been in a lot of trouble probably if they wouldn't have finished the weapons, because they were spending a lot of money.
Wait a minute, I have to stop you here. They were afraid that Japan would surrender. Good thing. Before we had a chance to kill a million people at Hiroshima, Nagasaki.
The reason was because they were spending a lot of money on something theoretical, and it was a secret program. And so if the war ended and no bombs had been produced, most of those army generals would have gone before Congress and had to explain why they spent all this money and have no results for it. So after Germany surrendered, there's actually documents showing them speeding up the process and letting these pools of water sit for less time before being put back in the Columbia. Mm-hmm. This practice kind of went on until the early 70s.
Way past the Cold War.
Still in the Cold War. And it was just that they were learning more and more about radioactivity and how much that this was a bad thing to be doing to a fresh water supply.
Mm-hmm. Now, the people that were working at Hanford, they were not military. Correct?
They were not military. It was the civilian division of the government. First, it was the Atomic Energy Commission, and then now it's the Department of Energy.
And there were families living there.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the amazing things about the area was so during the war, it was mostly single men working there. And then after the war was over and they realized that people were going to stay there, people were getting married, the army built up the town of Richland. And then it emancipated itself, became, you know, a non-government city. And it's a great place to live. It still is. During the 1950s and 1960s, 70s, 80s, people who lived there were very happy. It's a very happy community. And one of the ironies is that almost everyone's father worked at Hanford, but because of the secrecy, no one talked about their jobs. And so you had this whole community of people where no one was talking about this facility that basically employed everyone in the town. But it was normal because that's the way everyone was acting.
Mm-hmm. So the children, you know, because they didn't know the details of their father's work, no other child knew. So they didn't know that anything was untoward about that.
Yeah.
It's they knew that they were working for the government.
But even
that.
It's one of those things where they kind of knew, but since no one really talked about it, no one talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was that secret.
Mm-hmm. What I know about it is from our recent poet laureate, Kathleen Flanagan. Mm-hmm. And she's been here in Port Townsend and reading from her book, Plume.
Fantastic.
And
book.
Plume is all about her growing up as one of these children, mm-hmm. in Richland and at the Hanford site, and her father worked there. Some of the more touching poems are about her best friend and whose father died of cancer,
mm-hmm.
and they became aware that the reason that he died of cancer was from radiation exposure. And Kathleen even tells a story about herself working at Hanford and dressed up in her, the stereotypical white suited radiation worker, but that she was exposed as well.
Yeah, I mean, Kathleen is a fantastic poet and a wonderful person. I actually just saw her do a poetry reading in Walla Walla last week. And, a little bit about my work. So working for WPSR, one of the things we do is we help manage a traveling art and science exhibit. It's called Particles on the Wall. It was created by three people, a scientist named Dr. Stephen Gilbert, a poet named Nancy Dickman, and her sister, who's a visual artist, Diane Dickman. And the idea was to use art and science together to tell the story of Hanford and its effect on the Columbia River. And from its very beginnings, Kathleen Flanagan was a contributor to it. And she's kind of like the perfect contributor because she grew up in Richland. She worked at Hanford. She moved away to Seattle. And she both has the knowledge of the area as well as, a knowledge of the science. And then she's full of all the contradictions. Like, she's proud to have come from there. She's proud of her work from there. But she also sees what Hanford has done to the area and the potential. I shouldn't speak too much for her feelings, I've heard her speak and read many, many times. So I'm just regurgitating some of the things that she said.
I totally agree. From my interview with her and talking to her, I got the same impression. She doesn't want to knock down the Tri-Cities area in Richland or the people that live there or say, why haven't they protested? Mm-hmm. She completely understands what is happening there. Now, some of us who have, had the story about Hanford and the cleanup of Hanford and the amount of Are these barrels of radioactive waste, are they underground or are they above ground?
Yeah, so Hanford is currently one of the most contaminated places in the world. And when it shut down production, it became a cleanup site. And its biggest—
Was that in the 70s?
No, it was in the late 80s.
Late 80s.
And one of its one of the biggest issues there, which is one of the most important things about Hanford to know about, is so it produced about 56 million gallons of radioactive and chemical waste. And right now those are stored in underground tanks. There's 177 of them. About 67, 68 of them have leaked or are leaking. And that means that tiny bits of it is getting into the ground, which means that it could get to the groundwater. And if it gets, if it's leaking into the groundwater, that means it's going to head to the Columbia River. And that would be a very bad thing for Washington and the Pacific Northwest.
And our salmon.
And the salmon, yes.
And even the sea lions.
It's everything that goes in that river.
Everything,
Yeah, and that river goes through the whole state. It goes to Portland and then the Pacific Ocean. So it's almost the world's problem.
But it is a high priority. I mean, it's above being a Superfund site.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So about $2 billion worth of money, federal money, goes there every year to both monitor the radioactive waste and to work on cleanup. The plan,
or containment, which?
Right now it's containing it, but the plan is to build a waste treatment plant, which would vitrify the waste.
Turns it into glass?
Yes. So okay. It'll still be radioactive. It'll still be dangerous, but it won't move.
It won't move. Okay.
And so then the plan would be to dig a big hole, put it in iron and concrete, and then hopefully no one will disturb it for 20, 30, 40, 50, 100,000 years.
What about an earthquake? Is this an earthquake zone? It seems like everywhere is an earthquake zone now.
It seems like that, but... The Department of Energy, when they were going to build this waste treatment plant, they looked at some studies that have been done in the area. They've reassessed the area, and it's more prone to earthquakes than they thought it was in the 70s. And the plant is being built to withstand that. Unfortunately, there's other facilities in the area that might not be able to take an earthquake. There is the Columbia Generating Station, which is the last nuclear power plant in the Pacific Northwest. I don't know why anyone thought it'd be a good idea to put a nuclear power plant next to a nuclear waste dump, but that's what happened. So, yes, I mean, if there's an earthquake, it could possibly rupture the tanks. That's why getting the vitrification plant online and turning this waste into glass logs is a number one priority. It's a very complicated process.
And I can see that it's complicated. And so I'm curious about the timeline. Is there a timeline at all?
So there is a timeline. There's when cleanup started, there's an agreement signed called the Tri-Party Agreement, which it was signed by the Department of Energy, the State Department of Ecology, and the EPA. And it's a legal document that says what has to be cleaned up and a timeline for it. Fortunately, every once in a while, when it seems like the timeline isn't going to be met, it's just extended. Right now, we're about 25 years past the original timeline. Mm-hmm. And I don't foresee it speeding up anytime soon, unfortunately.
We're talking to Danny Noonan, who's the project manager for the Hanford Program at the Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. And his job there is to raise awareness about the history and current threats at the Hanford nuclear site. So I'm curious about this term, downwinders. Are there still downwinders?
So the term happened when there was a Freedom of Information Act that was done in the late 80s, which it was actually Spokane Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Spokesman Review, and some other nonprofit groups. And they filed the Freedom of Information Act. And this was back when Hanford was still a very secreted facility. And about 40,000 documents or 40,000 pages of documents were released. And it turns out that in the 40s, there had been a purposeful release of radioactive iodine into the air. And there's a longer story about it, but it's basically they wanted to figure out how long it would take this cloud to disperse, because once they knew that, they could figure out how long it would take a Russian cloud to reach the United States. And if they understood that, they could make a guess about how much plutonium the Russians were making. The Russians had just detonated a bomb, and they realized that from actually radiation in the air coming over. So
now, you don't remember this, but I do. I remember when there were news reports in the paper about how many particles of radioactivity were in the milk that we were getting.
Yeah. So, I mean, so that ties back in. So the Air Force wanted engineers at Hanford to release radioactive iodine into the air. And it's called the Green Run because the fuel was still new. It was still green. And so they wanted to do it when it wasn't going to rain or snow. And so they looked at the weather reports. They made a good guess. They released into the air. It, of course, started raining and snowing. And that brought the iodine down to the ground and into grass. And the cows ate the grass. And that causes a thing called bioaccumulation, which it means when you take in things, it kind of like makes it even stronger.
Now, were these just the cows in Washington State?
A little bit in Idaho as well, mm-hmm. Yes. And then that milk was, most people drank localized milk at the time. That milk was drank by everyone around, especially young people, exposing their thyroids to this radioactive iodine.
Mm-hmm.
So the reason it's called downwinders was because the people who were affected, it wasn't their proximity to Hanford. It was because they lived where the wind was blowing. They lived downwind from Hanford because there's actually areas that were much closer to Hanford that weren't affected by this, but that was because the wind was blowing in the other direction.
Mm-hmm.
So they kind of call themselves downwinders.
Mm-hmm.
There's been a lot of lawsuits. There's been studies that are saying that the people affected, it didn't really make that much of a difference, and it goes back and forth. But there are a group of people who self-identify as having been in the path of Hanford when it was making these iodine releases.
Mm-hmm. Well, so we know that we have a long way to go still.
Yes.
We have a lot of environmental concerns in our state right now. So each of the stakeholders has different ideas about what to do and what's going to happen next. Can you talk about some of those paths or, you know, what should people who are inclined to become more involved or want to do something, what are their options?
Yeah, and there's, I mean, one group that I haven't mentioned yet, mm-hmm. unfortunately they get pushed aside a lot, is the Native Americans, the Yakima mm-hmm. tribe. They have treaty rights to that area, and there's a lot of talk of, you know, I mean, they are cleaning up Hanford. They are making a lot of progress, and soon, you know, there's areas that are going to be able to be opened up to the public. What's going to happen there? Some people want to start building small module nuclear reactors there, which would be mini nuclear power plants. Some people want it opened up to have more wineries because Washington wines are very, very hot. And I think
that was an unfortunate term.
I think I'm you
hot
know,
whether from
whether
hand
yeah whether or not I did it on purpose is up for the listener to decide.
Okay.
But then you know, the Native Americans, they have a treaty that was signed in 1855 that says they have the rights to that land. I think, you know, there are a lot of different people who want, you know, have different ideas of what Hanford's future is, but unfortunately cleanup needs to be done before any of that happens.
Mm-hmm.
And cleanup, like complete cleanup of the area, is still a long ways away.
Mm-hmm.
Getting back a little bit to, you know, the Atomic Footprints series. So that came about because there's this traveling art and science exhibit called Particles on the Wall. And moving art around the state is very expensive. And we try to get as many places as possible, but we need a large room. You know, we need money to be able to travel, to get out there and to hang it. And so we decided to make up a series of posters, which are excerpts from that. So each poster has some visual art or photograph. It has a poem, and then it has like a paragraph or so to give historical and scientific information. And it tells the whole history of Hanford. And with those, we've been able to get them through to many libraries in the state and some schools. We're very happy that I was able to come to the library here in Port Townsend mm-hmm. for
and
a little bit.
And we put three of the posters mm-hmm. because we don't
have
the space display them, but we have had them up.
Mm-hmm.
And especially because people are aware of Kathleen, yep. and so one of hers. And then Linda Ozakaki.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
She's a local artist, mm-hmm. and so her work is there as well.
Yeah, and I mean, and one of the things about the artists and poets that we've come across or have crossed our paths is they didn't start making, you know, art or poetry because they heard about particles on the wall or atomic footprints. They had already done it, and mm-hmm. then they found out about it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there's a lot of people out there who, you know, somehow Hanford has touched them, whether they work there, they live near there, or someone they loved work there, or they just are concerned about it. And they, you know, use that inspiration to try to generate the conversation in the public. And the best way to do that, I think, is artwork mm-hmm. or poetry. And there's a lot of conflicting feelings about Hanford, and expressing it through art is a really great way. And that's another thing that my nonprofit does, is we go to high school and college classrooms, and we try to talk to students about this, about Hanford, and have them create art to bring into their community. Because, you know, a student can write a really great, you know, 5-page paper, mm-hmm. but not too many people are going to read it. But if they make a painting talking about the environmental dangers of Hanford or their conflicting feelings about it, they can get that hung up in their church, their community center. People are going to see it. People are going to start talking about it. People are going to maybe look up Hanford and try to find out more information about it. And the more people that know that Hanford is even out there, the better, because the only way we're going to have a safe cleanup out there is if everything is transparent, which in the past it hasn't been.
Mm-hmm. So people can find you, people that might be interested in contributing or becoming part of this program can find you on the Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility website.
Yes, and actually, Particles on the Wall, mm-hmm. which is where Atomic Footprints comes from, it has its own website, which is just particlesonthewall.org. It has photographs of most of the artwork. It has the poems that are in it. It has some videos of some of the artists talking about their work. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite artists that we work with, her name is Colleen Clement, and she does a visual piece in there that looks at Hanford's tanks, the tank farms and the waste. And she has a very interesting story because her grandfather moved there to work on Hanford in World War II to build Hanford. Then her father was a photographer, and the Department of Energy hired him to document the site in the 70s. And now her brother works there on cleanup. And so three generations of her family have mm-hmm. been employed by Hanford. And she has a lot of strong connections to the area. But then she also, you know, she's talked to me about how she's seen how Hanford has, you know, destroyed some of the environment and could contribute to destroying more in the environment. And so her piece is deals with creation and destruction, which is all about Hanford.
Well, it's not so long since the Fukushima tsunami and meltdown of that plant, and I'm sure that happened in November of 2011. And so now we're 4 years out from that. Mm-hmm. Have you noticed a heightened awareness and people talking about this more and a change in thoughts about nuclear energy since Fukushima?
Yes. I think a lot of people saw what happened in Fukushima and what continues to happen, and that really put the dangers of nuclear things on people's radar. It definitely galvanized people in the Pacific Northwest. A group in Portland kind of created itself after they heard about Fukushima. They saw that not only was there 56 million gallons of nuclear waste next to a river that goes through their town, but they also saw that there is a power plant in Washington State.
Mm-hmm.
The problem, you know, with nuclear power, a lot of people, environmental groups, their goal is to shut the power plant down. With Hanford, it's a little bit different. You know, we don't want Hanford shut down. We want the work to continue. The work is very important. What we need is, you know, transparency from all the agencies out there about what's actually happening. One of the problems that happened recently was one of the tanks started leaking, and it had been leaking for 11 months. Department of Energy was aware of this, and it finally came down to a whistleblower going to King 5 News and telling them this tank's been leaking for 11 months, and the Department of Energy has not told the public, which legally they should have told the EPA and the Department of Ecology. And so that's one of the things is, you know, when you know, people don't know about Hanford. Things like that can happen. But if everyone's really paying attention, it's harder for things like that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, providing support for people who are whistleblowers, which that's a very controversial issue out there right now because sometimes people think like, well, 99 people agree that this is okay, and then one person doesn't, and that person goes to the press, and that's everyone.
Everyone loses their job.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, kind of went off on a tangent there.
It's a very good tangent.
Oh, but
we're talking about just reality of what it's like to live there, to work there, to go through these events, and. And then
Washington also has the third prong of nuclear, which is nuclear weapons. The Bangor missile submarine base is one of the highest concentrated spot for nuclear weapons in the world. That's where the United States has their Pacific Fleet out of. And a retired Navy general had said that if Washington seceded, it would be the third biggest nuclear power, because that submarine base has more nuclear weapons than most countries do.
and sometimes that Hood Canal Bridge, you get stopped there because the nuclear submarine has to go through.
Yes. And these nuclear submarines, the Cold War is over, and we have to have a different mentality about our nation's defense. And they're unneeded, and they're about to spend a bunch of money to fix them.
Well, obviously, we have a lot more to talk about, and I'm so glad that you are here today to help me spread and help yourself spread the word about what is happening at Hanford and happening all over our state in terms of nuclear energy and the future of nuclear energy, and another environmental question mark for us to contemplate and perhaps get more active about. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to KPTZ 91.9 FM here in Port Townsend. This is Book Lovers Cafe, and today we were talking to Danny Noonan from the Washington Physicians for Social Responsibility. We'll find you next time. I'd like to thank everyone here at KPTZ, all the volunteers, Nora Petrich, the engineer, for today, but also the station manager. She wears many hats. And also Larry Stein, the program director. We'll see you next time. Don't forget to read. And I'll be at the library. Bye-bye.